Welcome back to Switchcast Season 5. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders. We're the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people. And we don't talk politics unless it's car related, although lately, boy, have we made that line real blurry.
It is. There's been too much, but it's all like, I'm sleepy. I'm tired of it.
Anyway, yes, I don't know if you'll notice a difference. Hopefully you won't, but we are filming this one at 9 in the morning this time, or recording, I should say. And we're definitely going to need the warm-up here. We don't have the liquid encouragement that we usually do, courtesy of brown liquor. Let's see. Follow-up from last week. The senator who had sponsored the bill to mandate front plates in Florida has already dropped that part of the bill. So that's no longer a thing.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, we did it.
It's only because of us, Doug.
Yes. I feel like Michael Scott and Dwight Schrute, when they go to David's house to stop the branch shutdown, they're like, how do we do it? I don't even know. What do we do? But we did it.
This is why we're here.
Win for freedom and no holes in your front bumper. Trump has already discussed dropping the automotive tariffs or at least delaying them. So the manufacturers who called his bluff by doing nothing might have been right. Time will tell. Also, Tyler found photos of that Nissan Nismo 270R that we discussed last week. The guy was trying to sue for $500,000 because, it's so original and perfect. And the car appeared to have been modified already back in 2021.
Yeah, it's, you know, because the issue I had is all of the articles that were written about this were using this photos from this gloriously stock, you know, unmodified example from the Nissan Museum. And then you look at this car, which still looked cool, but the hood wasn't right. The wheels weren't right. The like driver's seat had been replaced. The steering wheel was like really tatty and like just, it was still a cool car, but let's calm down.
Yeah. It's only original once. I need $500,000. No.
Yeah. Not even try again.
No, you don't. here's a good story this week. I do not like it when people text and drive or are otherwise distracted in driving. And I stopped someone this week.
You did?
I did not impersonate a police officer.
Walk me through this. How did you stop them?
I was actually driving in front of them. I saw them pull out into an intersection and they missed the stop line. And they were like partially in the intersection when they stopped. So I noticed them already. Do they not know how to use their brakes? But then they were following me on a two-lane road. I see this lady with like papers above her steering wheel. Looks like she's reviewing documents.
Gosh.
She veers into the left side a little bit. Then she does it more. Then she does it more for longer periods, like driving multiple seconds with half her car in the oncoming lane of travel. And it's a road with really no shoulder to speak of. And, you know, checking her makeup, doing anything and everything but driving. And I finally just stopped, put my hazards on. And she wasn't paying enough attention to realize I was coming to a stop and go around me. Any normal driver would have been like, why are you stopping? I'm driving around you. So I just walked back to her. And I guess I don't look too threatening, thankfully. But anyway.
Yeah, there's many ways that could have gone wrong for like both of you, I guess. But
well, it wasn't a redneck in a lifted truck.
I was pretty sure
I wasn't in any trouble. But anyway, I caught her off guard, obviously. But I was just like, ma'am, you need to stop this. Like, and you could see documents strewn all over her front seat. Like, it was a mobile office. I was like, you need to drive. Stop. You're driving in opposing lanes of traffic. I've been watching you in my rearview mirror. And like, every time I look back, you're doing something different other than driving. Like, you're going to hit somebody. Please, please just pay attention and drive. I was so frustrated. I was kind about it. I wasn't like yelling at her or anything, but I was felt satisfied.
What was the response?
She was just like, oh, okay.
She's probably so flabbergasted that somebody had the gall.
Yeah.
Honestly,
I couldn't really tell what she was feeling because she was probably our age, but looked like she was trying to look a lot younger. She looked Eastern European, very heavily made up, a lot of like injections and stuff.
Ah.
So she looked surprised naturally.
She also naturally, had some aftermarket modifications.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I couldn't tell if she was surprised or just the permagrin.
Nice.
Somebody reached out to me on Instagram, asked for a happy birthday to Bristol, their girlfriend, and it was like 2 weeks ago, so maybe the birthday is already passed. That would be the first time a Cannonballer is ever late for anything, but yeah, I was even born early, so.
So anyway. Are you telling me there's two? Does she actually listen?
Is that yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So happy birthday, Bristol. You've got a boyfriend that cares. We also have a care package from Ed from Chicago, same guy who made us these wooden coasters. I'm opening it now. I don't even know what this is.
You must really like us. Thank you, Ed.
Doug, for your team, I really enjoy your podcast. Keep up the great work. If he makes these coasters, I feel like we should buy some. Oh, more coasters.
Oh, whoa. Oh,
if Ed, let me know if this is a business that you do, because we'd totally buy these and send them to clients. These are awesome.
Yeah, they're
Ed,
so
thank
nice.
You. How great.
Heck yes. Wooden coasters.
The wow. official supplier of Switch Cars.
Put them up to the camera so you listening on the auto podcast can see.
Yeah. Should we describe beautiful wooden coasters with
well, Spotify is rolling out video.
Oh, they've
now.
Had that. Yeah, they've had yeah. that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that out of the way, let's get rolling to our main topics. Oh boy.
Oh boy. Are we ready to start?
Yes. Maybe.
Is it on? Okay.
Okay.
Is this thing on? What are we doing?
What is happening to car culture?
Oh.
We've discussed boy. Gatekeeping at Cars and Coffee in the past previously yes. because of that one in Texas that said no Mustangs, Challengers, or Camaros. That was a hot topic, sparked a lot of debate. But the debate today, is Cars and Coffee the best or worst thing to happen to car culture? Because I personally, I feel like car culture is going downhill for a number of reasons and on both ends of the spectrum, right? And before I get into this, I've seen some posts by, well, a guy named Casey Putch, who's,
oh,
whatever. He's constantly burning bridges and like, Cars and Coffee is stupid. The car, I'm out. You know, the big, like, I'm burning my bridges. I'm announcing my exit. And then he keeps coming back
it's
around.
Like,
and it's
cool,
just
bro.
Always drama. This is not what we're trying to do here, right? He seems to be disillusioned every other month with the car world. I'm not disillusioned. I think I would like to deconstruct it. So deconstruction versus being disillusioned and just say, like, what is wrong? What's the root of what's wrong? What's good? And what, like, what does the next generation hold? Like, how do we kind of continue the passion and not let it turn into, like, on one side of things, we have the street takeovers, which are, in my opinion, not car culture, but boy, does it seem like they're getting more attention than regular
yes.
car culture. And is that the future of it? So but Cars and Coffee. Some places it's a business, it's a for-profit thing, sponsors, organized, the whole works. You've got thousands of cars. Other places it's an organic get together. A lot of places it's synonymous with like almost street takeovers. You have everybody in BMWs and Mustangs trying to leave in a glorified fashion, but
they get stuck in the row of people
yes.
on the side of the road.
And that's a problem that they're wrecking, and that's ruining it for everybody else. But that's also kind of like putting us in straitjackets, right? Everybody's got to behave at yeah. all the car events. So what's the line? Is it Cars and Coffee? Is Cars and Coffee the problem?
I think that Cars and Coffee is too broad of a term because it means essentially all of the things that you talked about, but the street takeovers. Like, Cars and Coffee can be this for-profit organization that has 1,000 cars, or it can be, you know, 30 cars at a local coffee shop, just like that, get together and have a chill time and, you know, maybe go for a drive before getting there, you know, some groups that show up.
Well, let's talk about Cars and Coffee as we know it, kind of the commercialized thing where every city has a major event and it's a less formal thing versus a car show, right? So the previous generation had car shows. You register, you get trophies and awards, and it's very organized. You're there all day. You bring your lawn chair. The new iteration of car shows is what we know as Cars and Coffee. It's you go for a couple hours, you walk around, you look at everybody's cars. And in that sense, I think that's the best thing to happen to car culture, because old car culture is I'm bringing my special car out, planting my rear end in my lawn chair, and everybody come look at my special car because I'm so special and I'm going to tell you about it, and I better damn well win a trophy so I can feel special and be validated that I'm special. Cars and Coffee is I'm going to go park my cool car and then walk and look at other people's cars and engage with other people. I think that's the best thing ever to happen in car culture.
Yeah,
but it's going downhill.
And I think I was always so amazed that that's how I felt, because I grew up with the car shows that you talked about. Like my dad, I would go with him to a few, and it was you sit by your car and you just like wait for people to come up to you. And I was like, no, when I go to a car show, I like leave my car and I don't see it again until I leave. Like, I'm not there to see my car. I enjoyed my car on the way there, but I want to see my friends, or I want to see the other stuff that people brought out. And I do agree that that is the best thing. I think everything else about Cars and Coffee is just get it out of here.
Yes.
I'm over it. It's gone too far. It's not what the spirit of Cars and Coffee was originally.
Hold on. What was the spirit though? Cars and Coffee started as a business in California and he was trying to franchise it.
Oh, I guess you're right.
So like the idea was there, but it was also, I'm going to make money on this, build this brand. So therein lies the question, right? Okay. People think the same thing about car dealers. You should, the underlying premise of people's feelings is that nobody should make money off something that is this passion hobby, right? Cars are just, it's a passion, it's a love. So if you make money off car shows or selling cars or anything, you're evil. So do you think the profit thing is gross? Like, how do our car morals in that regard make any sense? Or should somebody be allowed to make money off of it as a business?
I don't think something like this should need to be a business. I don't think that you should need to have the organization required to make it a business.
But when you have 1,000 people...
That's a problem. Get them out.
Coming in.
Too many.
But
more
if,
gatekeeping,
but if
Doug.
People want to go, if there's 1,000 cars that want to go, like there's a number of very large successful Cars and Coffee around here. You can't do that without significant expense. You have to have either volunteers or paid staff. You have to have an insurance policy. You have to have a place. You probably have to pay cops and or security to be there. Like there's money that goes into it. If you've created something like that, why can't you make a bunch of money
off
of it?
So if someone building that up as an entrepreneur to make this such a thing, that doesn't make me feel icky, but I feel like the events of that size with that organization, whatever else, those are the problem.
Because size is the problem.
Size plugged in with the rise of social media. Like, I think you lose what I believe is the spirit of Cars and Coffee, what I personally love. So this is all like my personal stuff. Like, I'm sure that all the massive Cars and Coffees are a good time. I just don't. It's not what I want. I want my solution is that you need more gatekeeping, but not in the way that it sounds off the rip.
Okay, let's go there. Gatekeeping versus sharing the passion. Right, the car community is supposed to be inclusive.
And I still want it to be.
The greatest car events in the world are incredibly exclusive.
Yes. So I don't mean, when I say gatekeeping, it's fun to say that. And I like ruffling people's feathers because they're like, oh, how could you gatekeep? Everybody is welcome, but it's not a widely publicized, advertised thing. It is an organically grown group of people who bring other groups of people to just come and enjoy cars. I don't care what you drive. It doesn't have to be a $10 million Ferrari, but I think, you know, there's like, it's almost like the zeitgeist of like cars and coffee or whatever has gotten too big, and we need that to like break down into smaller events. So they will be local. I guess there will be a barrier to entry that you need to know a guy who knows a guy to know who knows a guy that some of these events are going on. But I feel like that's how you get people that are actually like into it.
So you're saying the gatekeeping happens on the relational, personal level, not a list of cars.
Yes.
Interesting. And that makes sense, because the best events, the original Cars and Coffee we started in Cleveland, was people. We just knew that those people were car people, and so they bring interesting cars. They weren't necessarily expensive or cheap, because I think there's two problems going into this, right? You can't just say, well, you can only have expensive cars for Cars and Coffee to be good, because there's just as many non-car enthusiasts with lots of money that are chasing clout just by buying something that, you know, the Lamborghini Aventador that they can just rev to the moon to get attention. Yep. At Cars and Coffee,
every single one,
Porsche or whatever it is. Like, it's just rich people being hoonigans, right? It's no different than the Volkswagen with the pop tune. Both are equally distasteful. So you can have zero money and be a proper car guy. You can even not have a cool car or interesting car and be a proper car guy.
100%. And in this future that I'm laying out, like, even if you don't have a cool car, you're still welcome.
But maybe not worthy. Like,
I see where you're
not
going.
Not unworthy of being a car guy, but nobody, we were struggling with this with our Cars and Coffee, and we finally just let it go because we're like, it's too much work. Is nobody goes to an event to share passion about a boring car. You can be a car guy and have a boring car, but nobody wants to see that at Cars and Coffee.
It's
Cars
true.
And Coffee is a combination of the people with a genuine interest and cars that you can genuinely be interested in at any end of the price spectrum. But when it starts getting overrun by BMW 3 Series and Audi A4s just because they put wheels on them, like, that's great. That's something you're passionate about. But this is normal traffic. It's no longer Cars and Coffee. It's tea and traffic. Like, there has to be some way of regulating that. And the Cleveland Cars and Coffee, as we know it now, I feel like has become everything I kind of don't like what we're talking about.
100%.
Doesn't help that the organizer is a convicted criminal. You know, that's some other drama there. But
there was a quote that I should have looked up before going down this path so I could actually sound intelligent for once. But, you know, it's if something is for everyone, it's not for anyone. Like, I don't know, that kind of vibe. Like, so there's another Cars and Coffee event that happens a couple times a year around us. And I have noticed that the Mustang guys show up 30 minutes before it starts and block off an entire corner of the parking lot with all of their 2015 plus Mustangs that all look the same. Just great. They're beautiful cars, but like, they get
the same
there.
About Porsche 911.
100%. I am a member of a guilty party. So, you know, they walk off a corner.
Green.
And then with a gray interior, then the Audi and the BMW guys take up another corner. And then all of the clout chasing rich people with their Aventador SVJs and everything else take up like the front, because everybody's got to run. All the like kids with their cameras like falling over themselves to go take a photo of this car that's been at every one of these events. Like, so you get all of these.
I had to throw that in there.
Well, that's the other thing, is they're at all of the same events. So like, there is a level that is disappointing in that a lot of these cars are not exclusive or rare or whatever anymore. Which is great because you get to see them.
This is why I think the Concours model will survive. It needs to change and be updated in terms of the judging and the stuffiness. Like if the Concours of the world, the Concours of the world could say, okay, let's take the exclusivity and the exciting nature of this amazing event with curated cars that aren't at all the other events, but apply the cars and coffee business model, the original kind of idea of the passion, a little bit more low key, and reach that next generation. I feel like that's the future of car events. And side note, plug, Northville Concours is run by young kids, and we're doing that. That's up in Michigan in July. So we're taking some cars up there, and I haven't been yet, but I'm excited to see what they're doing because I feel like they are trying to bridge that gap of we're a young generation that wants to kind of do things our way, but at the same time bring the greatness of the previous generation of car shows and car events along. So I think I'm pretty excited about that. But back to what you said earlier, the filming, the social media. I think that is the real downfall, right? Because people wouldn't be leaving car shows trying to show off if there wasn't 40 people lined up with cameras. Like, I'm going to make you famous. I mean, that's where the line between street takeovers and cars and coffee is blurred.
Yeah.
It's everybody wants to be famous.
Well, and I think it's hard to resist not doing a pull as you're coming out of Cars and Coffee, or like trying to slide like all the Mustang guys do, out of the Cars and Coffee when people are filming. Like, I feel kind of like a little bit of a putz when I just kind of leave like a normal human, because I don't do that kind of stuff.
I do. And here's the thing. And I think we'll end on this because we're running out of time for this segment. But there's so much more with social media that I think has ruined automotive culture. Just
A lot of things.
Yes. The accessibility of amazing cars. When I was a kid, these cars were so much more unicorns because I had to search them out, and it was work to find out when I could actually see one versus social media. They're just everywhere. Like, it's no big deal to see Ferraris and stuff anymore. So, but in terms of how it encourages people to do dumb stuff who shouldn't be doing it, there's a reason, there's a good reason that car guys like to leave Cars and Coffee in a trail of smoke, because that's part of the passion. These cars sound good. It's awesome to do a burnout. If you can control a slide out of a parking lot, everybody loves seeing it. And I will be honest, like, I miss the days that I could do that, because I used to be that guy. I had a loud Corvette. I had a loud 66 Mustang. I left the Porsche of Beechwood Cars and Coffee totally sideways in my 66 Mustang. There's no crowds outside. Everybody literally like didn't expect it to happen. They turned their heads around, all thought I was going to wreck because I was just like full throttle, totally sideways going out in traffic. Perfect slide right into my lane. And like, but I didn't do it for an audience. I did it because I'm like, I love my car. This sounds awesome. This feels awesome. And everybody appreciated it. But that was before everybody was doing it and there's cameras and people were getting hit. And like, that's quote unquote ruined it for everyone. But I miss the days when you could do those shenanigans, right? I don't like having to behave. I just feel like if you're going to misbehave, you got to have the skills to do it and not ruin it for everyone.
Well, and everybody thinks they have the skills, and you didn't really do it for attention. You did it because you enjoyed doing those things with a car. And I think that is potentially the crux of all of my issues with this, is it feels like a lot of these are not for the enjoyment of cars and for the enjoyment of fellow car people. It is for fame and clout and showing off and wealth posturing and everything else that is just real gross.
Yep. And quickly, there's an article. The city of Cleveland is going after property owners with $100 daily fines if your property is declared a nuisance with regard to car events. So like, you know, malls and shopping centers and stuff like that. If you have these car events, if they get complaints. Now, this is kind of silly because you have to get three complaints in order to maybe be declared a nuisance. And then the fourth complaint, you can, you know, you have to submit a plan to safety director. So again, another office reference. It's like when Jim gets a warning for being tardy from Dwight, and it's like, well, if you got three warnings and you get an official citation, five more of those citations, you know, whatever. So I don't know what they're trying to do here. I think Cleveland has way better things to do than worry about this, like maybe getting stolen cars and stuff. But it's another example of where the bad part of car culture, the street takeovers and the people wrecking, leaving cars and coffee is ruining it for everybody else. So anyway, let's move on to Plate to Sample, everybody's favorite game.
Let's go.
And this is brought to you by Soul and Spine, Alan Hoover, soulandspine.com. If you've got pain in your back, crunching, tightness, whatever, have been recommended surgery or injections, well, give him a shot, no pun intended, and maybe he can help your body heal itself. So that's not a medical recommendation. That's just what he does. So you have to consult him. He's a medical professional. let's see.
I've got five.
Okay, you start because I'm right. Still trying to find my folder.
Nice. I came prepared, Doug.
I'm prepared. I just can't find the folder.
This one comes to us locally from Tim G. Hi, officer.
Camaro ZL1.
Nope. It is very... I don't know why this plate... Nope. I don't know why this plate is on this car. It's...
Mazda Miata.
That's a little closer. It's a Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Is it a Trackhawk?
No, I think it's just a normal, like, it's just a normal car. Tim was like, I wonder if they're hauling drugs or something. Like, wild.
All right. Well, I've got one for you. One off one.
Corvette.
OFF1. No.
Is it a PTS 911?
Closer.
Is it like a Ferrari or something? Like, nope. A Ferrari.
It's a faience yellow Carrera GT. I don't know what makes that a one-off one.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's a great color, but that was a standard color, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay.
So I don't know. Who knows? It's a picture. Maybe it's paint to sample signal yellow, but I don't think so. It looks like faience yellow to me, but it's probably an interior option that nobody else got. Yeah. You know.
And then you're like, does it actually look good? Next up, a fan of the podcast, Johnny, sent this to me, from, I believe he's in, Alabama, never. And it's on a don't tread on me plate that apparently they
Ford pickup truck.
You are right. Ford F-150.
Heck yes. Does it have a gun rack?
I'm sure it does.
Oh man. This one, from Dom Marconi. Love this one. Oregon license plate, CSHFLO, cash flow.
Is this cash flow? So they have money. Is it a 911?
Nope.
No. Is it like a fancy sedan, like an S-Class?
Nope. Come on. Think
cash flow.
Come on.
I don't know.
Another base model Mercedes.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I was like, there's no way that is on a, like, an E-Class or something.
It's a 12-year-old Mercedes ML350. Previously, it was on an 07 ML. But surprise, surprise, there's no lien on the title. They own it outright. Oh, my God.
They do have cash flow.
I was totally expecting that they were, you know, usually when people talk about cash flow, it's it's, you know, code word for leverage. I'm leveraged, but I got cash flow. Okay, well, cash is better than cash flow. Your turn.
Next up from Andrew S. is Sassy Fish, S-A-S-Y-F-S-H.
Fish. What is a man. Fish? I feel like there's a clue here that I'm not getting.
I don't know if I would get this, because I don't normally think about these cars very often.
Sassy Fish.
That's my hint for you.
A salmon pink Porsche 911.
No, I think about Porsches all the time, Doug.
I know. You got me, and I'm gonna slap myself here because
Plymouth Barracuda.
Oh yeah, okay, good.
Green.
Okay, here's a good one. We're gonna have fun with this one. GI99LES. Giggles.
Giggles. Is this one of those Jeep Trackhawks? I feel like I'd giggle
yes,
a lot.
It
oh my
is.
God, seriously?
But not anymore. What? Not anymore. I looked the plate up and it is now on a 2021 Tesla Model S.
Oh,
fast, but not giggles.
There were so anyway, many more giggles with the Trackhawk.
Sneaky EV plate of the day.
That was good. There's some layers to that. For you, Alt 401k. This comes to us from Paul K.
I've seen this one.
On a
I've
Georgia?
Seen it.
Is it a Georgia plate?
Yes, Alt 401k. I don't remember what it was. It was on an exotic car of some
yes.
type. Lamborghini.
Not
no,
quite that.
Porsche GT3.
Yes, 997 GT3.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cheated a little bit because I have seen that. But, okay.
It's so good.
All right. CRPLVAN.
Is it Crumple Zone or no?
Cripple Van.
Cripple Van. Is this like a Chrysler Town and Country that has
nope.
been okay? Is it an old ambulance?
Nope.
Is it an old hearse?
Nope.
What
it's
is
a Ford Transit van.
I accept. Okay. Yeah, those,
that one courtesy of Ariel Barrera. Thank you
like
for
it.
That one.
Last one from me, related to the previous one, sort of. Ryan M. sent in his 401k.
Corvette.
No.
Because it says
but
his.
You are in the right
Corvette,
direction.
Corvette and Mustang people do the his and hers plate.
Yes.
So Mustang?
No.
Camaro?
Not, in the fact that this isn't going to be a 401k.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It any is modern exotic car.
It's a white 944.
Ooh.
I think you need your 401k to maintain that.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's where it went.
Yeah, that's
took
where
out a 401k yeah. loan to pay for the timing belt service.
Yeesh.
Last one, UFNWSH, UFN Wish.
Oh, this is a Mustang or a Camaro or a Corvette.
No.
What?
It is a Lamborghini Huracan Evo Spider.
I feel like he wishes he could have had enough money for an Aventador or something. For
well,
that
there
kind
is
of plate.
A lien on the title. He did finance
nice.
It. So I feel like that's a little bit of posturing, right?
He wishes he had the money for the car that he's got now.
Well, he would argue he's using other people's money. But the ironic thing is this came, the video that this plate was spotted on was in Charleston, South Carolina. It was parked in a known no parking zone and was being towed for parking
amazing.
Tickets as this video was happening. So everybody was like, you effing wish you didn't park there.
Effing wish you knew how to pay for parking. Amazing.
Yep.
Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
Every year, plus or minus, we have to do a auction breakdown, not necessarily auction results. We do that as well in terms of what the market is doing in individual segments, but the auction platforms themselves. And SBX, the hypercar, supercar, whatever you want to call it, well, I suppose we should call it what they call it, but I think it's a supercar platform. Anyway, they've just celebrated 1 year. And I thought that was a good opportunity to take a look back at kind of our predictions based on when they first launched. I remember we covered them, I think, last summer. And at the time, they had sold like 6 cars and 3 of them were Tesla Cybertrucks. So,
yes,
that wasn't a super good outlook, in my opinion, but everybody's got to start somewhere. But while we're doing that, we'll give you some updates and talk about the numbers on a whole bunch of auctions. Tyler, who was our research assistant this week.
As this guy.
Sometimes it's me, sometimes it's Aaron, sometimes it's Dan Doucette. But anyway, he's got some great numbers to, you know, pit these auction houses against each other to see what the results actually look like.
Well, and I think this is very interesting to look at across a bunch of different auctions, but I think we should all remember as we're talking about these that they all have slightly different markets. And so they are not entirely equivalent, but it is interesting because we hear about a lot of these all the time. There's always cars listed to kind of see, you know, what does the data say about their performance?
Right. And these numbers are, as we have essentially parsed them out, most of them come from a website called classic.com. So they may not be entirely accurate. We are reporting this and analyzing it as, you know, we've received the data. So don't take this as gospel, but I think it's pretty darn accurate. Obviously, Bring a Trailer is still top dog. They had way too many auctions to pull the data on, but I believe their published numbers are between 75 to 80% sell-through rate, which is a very impressive ratio.
Well, looking at some of these numbers, that's huge.
Yes. One thing they did last year that we talked about is they brought out the make offer feature, which is after the auctions ended, if it ends reserve not met, instead of connecting the buyer and seller to just let them work it out free of fees, they now have each person gets one counter offer. And if it's accepted, then the sale is recorded through the site, Bring a Trailer gets their fee, and then they put the winner in touch. Initially, I said, this is a great idea. I don't like it. Having used it now, we have a much lower, we used to have about a 50% rate of close with either the high bidder or another underbidder on Bring a Trailer with reserve not met sales. But often it was actually a different bidder because the high bidder felt, I feel like there was always this attitude of, well, I'm the high bidder, so obviously the market spoke, so why would I pay more than my bid?
Mm.
And it's like, well, no, it's just that's what it was today. So a lot of times underbidders would contact us because our name can be found easily, right? You can Google Switch Cars and find us. Private sellers can't do that. But anyway, we would have about a 50% ratio of selling to an underbidder or high bidder of reserve not met. With this new scenario, it's much lower than that. I think we've closed one.
Does it let anybody submit this offer?
Only the high bidder. Only the high bidder.
Interesting.
Yes. Which I understand that encourages people to bid. Like you should bid as if you want to win.
Yes.
You don't want to hedge your bets like people used to do with eBay because eBay would publish reserve not met. So people just, well, I'm not going to bid because the reserve's not met. So I understand why BAT does it. I just don't like it from a buyer and seller perspective. Let's see, Cars and Bids, which is pretty much number two in the space, has laid off some of their staff. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, things are up in arms. Well, they laid off their business development department, but...
Would you consider their business as pretty well developed at this point?
Probably. And if you ask a lot of car dealerships, they call it the BDC, Business Development Center. They can't, no salesman on the planet can stand the BDC, right? They're basically just metrics, right? They're setting appointments for salesmen. They're, well, why didn't you close them? Your metrics suck, you know? So it's like people that aren't really in sales being this intermediary that arguably doesn't need to be there. So the new CEO, Dan, is a customer of ours, and we had a great call. He called me and said, hey, what can we do better? What's your honest opinion? Don't hold anything back.
I like that.
On how we're doing, how we can improve, which I said, well, honestly, we've only done like two auctions on your site, so I appreciate you wanting to ask me, but I gave him an earful what they're doing well and what, you know, I had a strong opinion on a few things, but... Listen, they're still number two.
Do you think that if some,
not a bad place to
if
be.
Some of these changes were potentially implemented, that you would choose to list more cars there if
sure.
it made sense?
Yeah, we are actually running a car on there shortly. And we've got a Volvo C70. I think typically the cars we're selling are a better fit for Bring a Trailer. Again,
that's
each
true.
Auction yeah. has its kind of niche. This Volvo we're running is definitely a better fit for the Cars and Bids marketplace, in my opinion. I guess we'll see. Drive Down Cars was the auction platform that instead of bidding up, it would bid down essentially. It would reduce the price every day until it got to their floor price. They're done.
Really? I liked that idea.
I did too. I really did.
And they had a ton of marketing. I don't know what it takes to, you know, be successful in a car auction business. But I like that idea of if you want it, you have to make sure that you want it bad enough.
Right.
Like, it's not waiting to see what somebody else will pay. It's waiting for somebody else to just buy it out who's yep. willing to pay more than you.
Yep.
So that feels more like market price type. I don't know. I liked it. It was a fun idea.
I liked it. They missed on a few things in terms of execution. They didn't start with a critical mass of cars for sale, which I think was a critical error. But it was a good site. It was good people running it. And I liked the idea. So I was bummed to see that one go down, but they can't all make it. Let's see. Whew. A bunch of sales, right? So Cars and Bids sold a couple years ago to a private equity. Bring a Trail obviously sold to Hearst years ago.
Yes.
P-Car Market, I've heard a rumor that they've sold.
Oh.
So we'll wait to see if there's an official announcement. I don't know to whom or how much or if the rumor is true, but let's see. MB Market also sold last year. The details are a little bit murky, arguably somewhat of a hostile takeover.
Oh.
But yes. Anyway. A lot of sales. It seems like that's the play, is you build up an auction platform and you sell it.
Well, I also think, you know, in the online discourse around the Cars and Bids layoffs, which there was a lot of garbage in there about people that don't know how to run businesses. I don't know how to run a business, but I at least acknowledge that. I thought it was interesting that, you know, we are entering, as we've talked a lot here on the podcast, a very interesting time in the car business where in the last 5 years, I think there was a huge hunger for buying or like, you know, having a platform to sell cars at ever increasing sale prices. Correct. So now if we're entering a period, we are in a period of market cool down pretty much across the board, I think.
Yes. Hagerty just released their market rating and it was 50, which indicates a flat market. And they said it was the first time it's been in the 50s, I think, or below 60 since 2011.
That's crazy.
Yep.
So it's very easy. There is a market available for different ways to sell cars to different groups of people. And if there's a flat market, that just decreases. The demand decreases. So businesses have to change. And I think everybody who sold, I think, is a genius. They did it at the right time.
Sold their auction platform or sold their car?
No. Sold their auction platform. Because I think, you know, not to say that in 10 years, we're not going to be at a market of whatever Hagerty called 80 or whatever. I don't know what's going to happen. But I think in the short term, we're going to be in a bit of a tough spot for a glut of online ways to sell cars.
So let's look at the competition. We're going to highlight six of the... not top ones, but six of the kind of competitors for that secondary market under Bring a Trailer. So we've got SBX, P Car Market, Hagerty, Hemmings, Cars and Bids, and MB Market. We were not able to pull numbers from SOMO, which is Sotheby's Motorsport Online platform, because of how they report stuff. But there is something interesting to note about SOMO is they just announced that they have a sealed bidding auction platform coming soon, which kind of makes sense because RM Sotheby's is a much higher end clientele. So the sealed bid makes sense. And that's something different, obviously. And one of the advantages to this, they say, is there's no published result. So the future value of your car is not impacted by a published sale, which may or may not be accurate. We all know there's manipulation that goes on. There's inconsistencies. There's stuff that happens behind the scenes. And so published numbers are not always accurate, but here are the published numbers. Let's see. SBX. Now let's end with SBX.
All right.
Yeah. Cars and Bids. Again, number two in the space.
I will say too, the data we're talking about is pretty consistently within the last year.
Yes. Yeah.
Starting mid-ish April of 24. Beginning of April to mid-April of 24 until, you know, like a week ago.
Cars and Bids is a clear leader here. 138K approximately in 138 million. Sorry.
I say, whew, man, that's not a lot of 138
million in disclosed or reported sales. 5,400 cars sold in the last year. Average price 25K. So on the lower end of things.
But I feel like that's where Cars and Bids shine.
Yes.
It shines is the enthusiast, interesting, but doesn't have to entirely engulf your wallet like
yep.
stuff.
Sell through rate 76%.
That's nuts.
Very impressive.
Heck yeah.
Very impressive. Now, a lot of people will allege, we're dealing with facts here, not opinions, but a lot of people say Cars and Bids only wants reserves at wholesale. So yeah, I mean, they want a good sell through rate. So maybe what we didn't compare here, because it was nearly impossible to do, is, well, where are their sales for models coming in versus BAT versus the open market? Like, to pull that data would be very, very tough. But you can't argue with 5,400 cars sold. Some of them are going to be below market, some will be above market, and some will be right at market value. Or they are determining the market, right? Who's to say? It's the market on that site on that day. MB market, smaller player, Mercedes only, which I actually like. I wish more platforms were sticking to a niche and becoming an expert in it. I feel like you get better descriptions. If you're looking for an older or more obscure Mercedes, you just know, like, that's the place to go.
And I think that will allow them to weather any sort of storm. Like, I do think, you know, I had just talked about how we're in a weird period where we might need to pare down. There's not as much appetite or demand. MB market, I theorize, will remain a, like, premier place to get your your Mercedes products.
So. I wish P car market had stuck to just Porsches, but whatever.
Yeah, now it's just car market, which... Yeah.
I feel like they should have changed their name a long time ago when they did away with, you know, added cars beyond Porsches. But anyway, MB market, 3.9 million in sales, 147 sold, average sale price 26K, sell through rate 45%, which isn't too bad for a smaller market player.
And what I thought was interesting in compiling these statistics is, you know, we think of like 75% as a C because of grading and like, in school or whatever, but it seems like the sell-through rate is much lower than I would anticipate, but I think it kind of makes sense. A lot of the times you're just not going to reach the value on potentially that day or with the right people in the room. So I honestly think like Cars and Bids 76% sell-through rate is nuts.
Yeah, it's very good. Very good. Hemmings, 16.5 million in sales, 755 sold, 1627 not sold, 31% sell-through rate for a big company. They bill themselves as the world's largest online marketplace. Average sale price, 22K, probably a lot of muscle cars, you know, the yes. boomer specials. I think Hemmings' problem, and we have advertised on Hemmings, I think their problem is that they're trying to do too much. They have the make offer platform, the auction, and the classifieds. And they kind of tier them in terms of how they push that stuff. I think they need to consolidate. Maybe you have two, right? So Hagerty has the classifieds, the Hagerty marketplace, and the auctions. And by the numbers, it's worked out way better for them. They have 20.3 million in sales over the last year, 833 sold, 24K average price, and a 68% sell-through rate. That's pretty darn good. That one
That's
surprised
nuts.
Me.
What's interesting is Hagerty, Hemmings, MB Market, and Cars and Bids all have essentially the same average unit price per sold car.
You're right.
So there's really focused on a similar-ish price point, but I would think because I don't, you know, obviously MB Market is focused on Mercedes-Benz. Cars and Bids is just about anything. Hemmings and Hagerty, I feel like, are maybe more muscle car. I don't know if Hagerty is. Hemmings is for
classic
sure.
Classic car, I'd say.
Yeah. Because when I'm looking for the stuff that I'm interested in, I don't think I've ever ended up on Hagerty or Hemmings.
Correct. I do search Hemmings for stuff, but I honestly don't use Hagerty. It just doesn't come to mind. Okay, P car market. Let's see, 53.2 million in Ooh. Disclosed sales.
Spicy.
Does that include their deal tank sales or is that just auctions?
I believe this is deal tank.
Okay.
So it's everything.
Okay.
We should assume it's everything.
All right. That makes sense that it would include that. But a pretty abysmal sell-through rate, 27% sell-through, 675 sold, 1,777 not sold.
Well, and this aligns, you know, obviously I'm focused on a very specific market of 996 GT3s, but That's what I have seen with that market, is a lot of the listings are no sales.
Yeah.
With like crazy reserves or a crazy deal tank after the fact. And so it was interesting because I followed that so closely for the data to match kind of what I feel on a very, very specific slice of their overall market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the reason they have such higher overall sales, so they have less sold than Hagerty in terms of units, but their average sale price is almost 79K. They're in a different market there. And then SBX. Oh boy, this one was interesting to me. Their max unit sale, this is their the supercar auction, this is the highest one of any, is $6 million. Their minimum sale is 98K. Total price of disclosed sales is 11 million. Their sell-through rate is a pretty weak 30%. Now, this number, these number includes, right? So they say 33 are sold. Now, this is according to the classic.com data parsing. I went through manually to look at this as well because they sent out an email saying happy anniversary to ourselves, $100 million in cars. And I said, well, $100 million?
That's different.
That's not the number I have.
That's helping me get past the fact that you didn't trust my data, Doug. What the heck?
I think what they're saying, because they had 33 sold, 78 not sold. But also, if you look at their lot numbers, they've got about 109 historical listings. But their lot number at the time that we pulled this, their highest lot number currently was 284. So I think their lot number is all the submissions, I'm guessing, or they're using some funky numbering system.
Interesting.
So 100 million is either all the cars that are submitted or all the cars that went on their site but didn't sell. But either way, that 100 million number is incredibly misleading. Yes, 100 million in cars, but not in sales. Now, there were a number of sales that happened as disclosed on their site that said this vehicle sold privately after the auction. So it's reserve not met, so it wasn't included in their sale data. But when I reached out to them and said, hey, does this mean it sold to the high bidder? Like you guys collected a fee or you just noted that it sold to pump your numbers up? I did not receive an answer. That was a couple weeks ago, so we don't know. But best case scenario, worst case scenario, they have 4.6 million in sales that actually completed via the auction process. 4.6 million, that's very low. There was 11 that sold privately after the auction closed. So that's 37. Some of those did not disclose values, which is how we came to the 33 number, because when we downloaded the data, that was including the ones that they disclosed a sale price. Now, I will say that the ones that said they sold privately were all multi-million dollar cars. So that effectively like double or tripled their total sales.
Yeah, I think one of them was the like shooting brake old Aston Martin that is so cool.
Yes.
Like the old Vantage or I'm butchering this, but whatever it was awesome.
Yes. But like if we say, well, I mean, they're only... If they're doing, let's take the, what was the number here? 11 million in sales, 11 million at a 5% commission is $550,000 in revenue. That's not a lot for an auction platform like that. Like that might have paid back their website development costs.
Yeah.
The good thing is, and a lot of these companies are like this, is they've got nearly unlimited money backing them. So for a first year, that's not too bad. But sell-through rate, very, very low. Total sales in terms of numbers, quite low. But they're reporting a lot more.
Well, and I think, you know, even in spite of that, like, you know, I don't want to try to argue that there isn't some sort of rosy look at some of the numbers. I think SBX is trying to do something very difficult because you can see it in their average, you know, per unit price, even without some of those big boys that were not disclosed. They are trying to break into a market that is extremely different from all of the other auction sites that we've talked about.
396,000, which is what I like about them What did I like about MB Market? They are defining a market and saying, this is our niche. SBX is the supercar auction platform. I felt that they didn't do that last year because they were all selling Cybertrucks. So yeah. If they stick to this supercar auction platform and can pull it off, good on them.
And that's where, you know, where we'll see things like the Aston Martin V8 Sportsman Shooting Brake is what I was talking about. Now, this was one that sold after. We don't know the price like that, but that is some crazy stuff that probably wouldn't end up on really any of these other platforms. But I do think that by choosing a niche and by really focusing on what I would say is a difficult market that is really owned by the existing, like we'll call them brick and mortar auction houses that go to concours and go to events, you know, they're really trying to forge a path. And I would like to see them be successful because I think successful in sticking with it rather than opening up and you know, lowering their goals to accept more cars just to stay alive.
Despite how much we dogged them for their listing on that Ferrari last week.
It's a complicated, I have complicated feelings, Doug. I think they need to maybe stop making things so rosy, but they're choosing a difficult path, which I think makes it easier for them to think they need to.
Yeah.
Be very positive about things.
Yep. Last one, guyswithrides.com. I didn't realize this thing was still even around, but I got an email, I think it was on Sports Car Market, that they were advertising there a special. And I'm going to say it right now. This is, well, the website kind of sucks, but the business model is completely unsustainable. They're basically like, where you're rejected by Bring a Trailer, we'll come here. And it's like, it's not a good start.
Yeah, this is like the guy on the shady used car guy on the corner.
Looking for a safe alternative to Craigslist, eBay Motors, or Facebook Marketplace? What's Craigslist even?
Yeah, like I don't think I'd...
Just $1 to create a self-service auction. You can set your own reserve price. So I guess what they're doing here is they're hands off. So they're basically saying, well, this is just free revenue. We don't have to do anything. We're not crafting the listings. But if a seller sets their own reserve price, that's a recipe for cars not selling. The reason Bring a Trailer and Cars and Bids has such high sell-through rates is they set the reserve. They tell the customer, this is what we think works. And you, like, the seller has to accept it. But like, that makes sure that cars sell because people always think their cars are worth way more than they are.
There are three. These are auctions ending the 24th, which was Tuesday. What is even going on?
Nothing. Not much at all. So $1 to list. Let's see. No silly end of auction time extensions. Those aren't silly. A real auction, you keep it going until people stop bidding. Then you don't have the eBay proxy bid stupid crap that people hated. 1% buyer's premium capped at only $500. You can't make money that way. $1 to list and $500 max buyer's premium? Like, no way. Oh, and no dealers, private party listings only. Well, you're eliminating a big, big portion of the market.
I love the Mecum calculator to note for them to say, like, here's how much it's going to cost to auction your car at Mecum.
They have three cars, a terrible ACA steel-bodied Cobra one-off replica. It's definitely a one-off. It looks like it was homemade. I don't want a one-off replica. I want a Factory 5 or Superformance or something made by somebody. A Fascioli pistol car? Whatever that
is. No idea what that is.
And a Volkswagen Karmann Ghia.
They've got a... they listed in 2023 a Concours Caliber 996 C4S cab tip with aftermarket wheels.
How much did it get bid to? $5,000?
It said it sold locally.
Oh, so it didn't sell on their platform.
55,000 miles, modern style Fuchs wheels, and Tiptronic automatic are the selling points.
Yes. Yeah,
Concours quality for sure.
Oh, all right. Well, they're serving the market. Bailey on here that we need served. To send to him.
What is a Cadillac Seville Opera Coupe? Yeah.
Sounds like it has a Landau roof.
It does.
A North Star engine and front wheel drive. Three things that make a car a definite winner.
Oh, this is amazing.
All right, moving on to our segment, Things You Shouldn't Ask on the Internet. On Threads, which is an absolute dumpster fire of a platform. But let's see. Somebody says, which do I buy? My friend is a master mechanic at Toyota. My other is a lead mechanic at the Mini BMW dealership. Both are telling me that BMW will be more reliable and makes more sense to buy than the Corolla financially.
In what world?
Should I spend $30,000 on a Toyota Corolla or $35,000 on the BMW M340i? Hate that they put M in front of anything that's not an M. Both BMWs will be the same. Is it worth a little more?
You missed out. The BMW B58 is my dream car, and it's only a few thousand more and verified to be more reliable.
Yeah, honestly, I titled this segment wrong. I think this is one he should ask on the internet, because if his Toyota mechanic and his BMW mechanic are telling him that the BMW is more reliable than a Corolla, he needs new mechanics. And
yes,
hopefully
seriously.
That's what the internet told him. In what world is a BMW more reliable than a Corolla? No world. My wife, I sold her Corolla like 8 years ago without her permission. And every car since then, she's just like, I miss my Corolla. It never needed anything.
A buddy of mine had a Toyota Yaris that he put over 100,000 miles on and never had to do the brakes. It's not like he didn't want to. The mechanic said just, no, they're fine. They're made out of vibranium or something. I don't know what's going on.
Vibranium. buy the Corolla. I don't know. Yeah. And find new mechanics.
And maybe think about your dream car again.
Reevaluate your goals in life. This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. Check out their selection at sheffieldwatches.com and mention that you found them on Switchcast.
So, Doug, I can't stop thinking about this Cadillac Seville Opera Coupe. I had no idea this existed, but like, look at this thing.
Oh, my God.
It's like a really long 70s Cadillac that has just two doors now and a really long hood.
So you said Seville. I'm thinking like the newer one. I was like, man, Landau roof, front wheel drive. North Star. That is a recipe for a winner of a car. How could you go wrong?
But this is amazing. They've got this Craigslist classifieds section on Guys With Rides, and it's like kind of what BAT used to be.
Yeah.
Like it's just random Craigslist stuff.
Yeah. They don't have as much traction as BAT though. They have three listings on there. So dollar listing, they have $3 in verified revenue.
Not doing much with that.
I don't even think they need to file a tax return. I have complained many, many times about emissions testing in Ohio. And most people are like, what are you talking about? We don't have emissions testing. Yes, we do, in seven counties around Cleveland. However, it is about to end.
Wait, seriously?
Supposedly. Maybe.
I got me excited.
There is a bill to do away with emissions testing in the seven counties or six counties plus Cuyahoga County, which is Cleveland. It is passed the Ohio Congress and it has been signed by the governor. So you'd think that's a law, right?
It makes sense. I don't know how this works.
It still has to get a rubber stamp from some official in the U.S. EPA, which I find frustrating. There's probably some government experts who'll tell me why this works that way. My wife was very clear to tell me why I'm probably wrong. But as a believer in state sovereignty and essentially the branches of government, if The legislature passes it. The executive branch signs off on it. Why do we then need to wait for some unelected appointed official in some federal department to just sign off and rubber stamp a law that we've passed?
If they're even there anymore at this point.
Right. And well, I mean, we also have the Ohio EPA, which oversees this. So it's like federal department, Ohio department. But nah, it doesn't matter what you do in, you know, the constitutionally appointed way of passing laws. Nah, just some guy has to rubber stamp this law for it to take effect. So that frustrates me. It may be because I don't understand it, but it frustrates me nonetheless.
I mean, I will say an e-check is a more of an annoyance than anything else. I use one of the self-serve stations, so I just plug in their OBD2 reader and it's fine.
Yes, but when you have cars that you spend a fortune trying to get rid of check engine lights that you only drive 1,000 miles a year, it's like, why? Why does this happen? Why does this exist? Right? The cars that are not passing emissions are not the problem with emissions, and I could argue that cars aren't the problem anyway, right? That there's such a small footprint. And why selective? Why only 7 counties in Ohio, right?
So that part is wild and doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like,
it's this program comes at a great cost to the state, according to Cleveland19.com, $11 to $12 million a year that this costs the state of Ohio. Customers do not pay for this. Residents don't pay for it. They're forced to do it, but they just go there and it's quote unquote free. The representative who sponsored this bill, Romer, said that we could direct the money to many more beneficial programs in Ohio or just reduce the budget. Give it back to us.
Yeah. That's a lot. That's a ton of money for, I don't even know. What does this do? It doesn't keep anything off the road. It does, but
it kept my Lamborghini off the road. Sort of. Representative Romer contends e-check is outdated in Northeast Ohio since the state has more energy efficient and electric cars on the road and less industrial pollution than when e-check started 30 years ago in response to the U.S. Clean Air Act. I don't think it's because of EVs. I think it's just outdated, period. Right. So 30 years ago, why did the Clean Air Act happen?
Air be dirty.
Right. Okay. But do we still need emissions tests? No. Our levels are way below where they need to be. They've tested that, like, this isn't a problem anymore. So why do we still have the law? And I'm actually happy that Ohio did something about it, because I think this is one of these rare occurrences when a law that was passed at a point in time for a specific reason has actually been repealed later on instead of remaining forever on the books and or growing in its power and scope. A lot of programs, you know, the union was originally intended to be temporary to solve a problem. Unemployment was originally intended to be temporary. I believe Social Security was as well. And now they're all bloated, big financial monstrosities with way too many people employed by the government for, whatever.
But I will say, let's get us back on track here. Cars. That I've at least anecdotal evidence from a buddy of mine, his dad said that he remembers in like the 80s and 90s being in the Cuyahoga Valley National Park near us and not being able to see like the next hill because the air quality was so bad. There was so much shit.
But was that cars or was that the industrial pollution?
I don't know. But the fact that he's like today, it is amazing how much cleaner the air is around. So like whatever it is, whatever was put in place in the 90s, early 2000s appears to have worked.
Right.
Which is fantastic.
Absolutely.
And I hope cars are not the problem.
Yeah. So let's do away with, I don't believe doing away with all emissions regulations by all means, especially with these big corporations, because they're, you know, they're dumping and polluting and burning and stuff at astronomical levels. Cars are not the problem, especially not the ones going through e-check.
Are you telling me your Diablo isn't the source of 5% of all Ohio's air pollution, Doug?
No, but going back to laws that stay on the books too long, and we'll keep this car related, right? So take the 55 mile an hour speed limit, for example. Please take it. Rodney Dangerfield, Michael Scott. It was enacted in response to the gas crisis. right? The gas crisis had nothing to do with safety because they thought, well, at 55 miles an hour, cars will be more efficient, which is not necessarily true. But anyway, that was why the law was passed. But it then became a bastion of safety, and it took until the 90s for it to be fully repealed nationwide because it was basically like a state-by-state thing that repealed it. So much for 2 weeks to flatten the gas curve, right?
All this stuff is really old because, you know, I've noticed when I'd use these self-service e-check stations, they're running Windows XP. Hopefully they're not on the internet. Very insecure. But those bings and bongs, oh, so I miss those. So good.
Another thing, I think this is a benefit to the counties, and I feel like they should have, the counties that have e-check, they should have been thinking about this because there's a lot of cars. People have told me to register the Lamborghini or other cars I struggle with getting to pass e-check in counties that don't have it. So, like, that's lost sales tax revenue for these counties and registration fees, which registration fees are fairly minimal here. But, like, let's say when I bought the Lambo, I put it in Stark County. So my county would lose $30,000 in sales tax. And that is happening. It's maybe not a huge line item in their budget, but it might be a few hundred thousand dollars a year that they're losing. So they're going, oh, shoot, not only do we have to pay to keep this system up, but we're, I guess the state pays for the e-check stations. But not only is this a cost, but also we're losing revenue. But this will be perfect timing for me. Not really. All my cars except the 997 have just reached the 25-year mark. Nice. And the Corvette and the Diablo were very difficult to get through e-check because they just have intermittent check engine lights. So, you know, now after all my suffering, the kids will have it easy. But there's a caveat to this. They are not doing away with emissions requirements. And definitely not for car dealers. Car dealers, man, we have it tough. So we're not allowed, car dealers are not allowed to buy a car with tampered emission systems, even if we're going to fix it. We have to make the customer fix it first, then buy it before it fixed, and then sell it, which is another nonsensical law. Like, why not just put the requirement on, you can't sell them, so then the dealers will buy them and fix them. Like, that should be a net positive.
It seems very...
Anyway, that law has sort of changed recently too, but it requires owners to self-report.
What?
They'll create an alternative emission certificate. This certificate would be granted after a vehicle owner attests that to the best of his or her ability, they have met state and federal emissions regulations.
How is this going to do anything? And what's the, how do you, how do they enforce it? Are they going to send a letter to you that says, hey, we haven't received this? How much money in postage are they going to spend sending people all this garbage?
I don't know. I don't like that either, though. Yes, government, my cars are emissions compliant. I signed this under penalty of prosecution, right? Like, it's like self-tech for track days. It removes the liability on the track, but yikes, there's some cars that shouldn't be out there.
I promise, I just changed my brake fluid. I swear. Yikes.
And my wife is like, well, how are they going to use that against people in the future?
Yeah.
You said that your car, I mean, that's like signing your tax return, too. You have no way of knowing the intricacies of all the IRS code, but you're stating, yes, absolutely.
Well, that's a whole other thing. The government's like, we know how much money you owe us, but we're not going to tell you. You have to figure it out, and then we're going to get you in trouble if you got it wrong. It's like, I don't know, man.
Oh, man. You're basically asking car guys to lie to the government now. So before it was, they're trying to cheat the system. Now it's just like, well, just sign this affidavit. Really? Really? Make a liar out of people. All right. Props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars.
Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Be sure to check out our handpicked inventory online at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information at switchcars.com, where you can even come visit our showroom in Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, what are the props and flops, the poops and floops, the floops and flops?
Well, this week, instead of the prop and flop. We're doing the plop and plop of the week, which combines prop and flop. You'll see why in a second. The first plop, a Honda Accord drives into an indoor pool. Kind of like Cannonball Run, Terry Bradshaw, but yeah, into an indoor pool. So it kind of plopped. Definitely made a splash in the news.
Sure, man.
And it wasn't a cannonball either.
All right, I'm done. Can I leave, Ethan?
I hope he had gap insurance because he's going to be underwater on his loan. Although the sign at the pool, in all fairness, did say no diving, not no driving.
Oh, God.
I'm just flooded with jokes here. I can keep going. The other plop, Carlos Sainz received a $10,000 fine for being in the bathroom during the national anthem at the race. I'd say that must have been one heck of a plop. I was trying to come up with a national anthem joke, but my writers were on strike this week.
Look,
the flag was at half staff. Okay, we couldn't do it.
Oh gosh.
Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.